I was intrigued by that image. I kind of saw it because I was close. I had the advantage of being here. Now, is there any idea of how? I mean, it's kind of. Denying most of the content of your talk, sorry about that, but is there any idea about what is the difference of how to spend free time in this model of production, you know? Because that image is kind of, you are pointing at the position of the worker, like, on in between the energy source and the output. Like, I mean, I don't know, but it's kind of, I would like to see the mirror image of free time. Where is then the human, or what do you do in this model?
Mm-hmm. Well, I mean, this is the model of capital.
Yeah.
So Marx is arguing to think beyond that. In a way, many of the kind of anti-industrial, anti-capitalist movements of the time didn't reject the idea of work itself. They simply wanted work to be nicer. But Marx is kind of arguing that work itself is the problem, and how work or labor is defined is the issue. And Arbeitskraft, this idea of labor power, on the one hand it creates this abstract model which totalizes all labor, but it also creates the possibility of thinking of restructuring in order to reduce the kind of necessary social labor. How that free time is spent is, I think, for Marx, something that shouldn't be part of the model. It's just the fact that there is the free time there. And in a way, what we've seen in the 20th century is, on the one hand, a recognition of this kind of free time can be created through industrial processes there, but at the same time seeking to capture that free time and pull it back into the system. Marx doesn't talk about that much, but there's, like, for example, a passage in the German ideology that says, I could wake up in the morning and go fishing in the afternoon, I can be a critic in the evening, I can be a poet, and amongst other things. So really it's I think for Marx he's arguing that we can restrict production to where it's socially necessary, and then everything else is just left as it is. But in a sense, what we've seen since Marx is that's not quite so simple as he argues, because the attempts to kind of recapture that have become characteristic of essential capital.
Could you say something, maybe? Because I was thinking in this sort of shift to look at the methodologies and the ways of measuring as then that makes place for the tool maker. No, I mean, how do you think of this, the figure of the tool maker that also Eleanor brought up yesterday? Away from the sort of ecstatic excitement about that there the possibility is, because still then there's the question, what type of device do you make? No?
And a device isn't necessarily sufficient in itself.
No.
Recognize too. In a way, that's kind of part of the idea. And again, this is kind of going against the kind of arguments that we've made. Is not accepting the regular structures of politics as being the way that we conduct politics, but rather thinking about how. The apparatus can be, or the questioning can be, the way of articulating the new politics. The tendency is often that we are forced into a position of articulating the questions in the form that our existing politics demands. How we make that shift is kind of the issue. Some of the projects Eleanor was talking about kind of are, in a way, some attempts at that. I think, in a way, I find LARP the most interesting. I've looked at the Dark Mountain project as well, and I kind of agree with Eleanor that raises interesting questions, but then it falls into problematic responses. It doesn't really seem to open up the possibilities of what those questions raise. in how it responds to them. So LARPs kind of suggest these one aspect of that, but that in a sense is also kind of specific to particular kind of practices and cultures in itself. So I think what we kind of saw in the kind of like the early phases of kind of free software open source was this kind of excitability about the tools, and the idea that if we simply apply this everywhere, we will transform things, and we haven't seen that happen. And indeed, what we've seen is, in some respects, aspects of open source development have become the mechanisms, the new mechanisms of control. And that, so to some extent, it's an addressing of that. But I think it's also maybe of rethinking ideas like the personal and political, which are often shaped in a similar model to what MOVE talks about in the past, which is still sort of relating personal politics back to some universal model. Instead, maybe there's ways of thinking about that that do not seek to relate back to a universal model, but rather think in terms of what capacities are appropriate at different times. So to come back to tool making as a kind of way of thinking that, then it's the kind of tool making process need not be the idea of a kind of universal tool or a tool that relates to particular to universal, which is still, I think, a pattern that a lot of tool making approaches take, but rather think in terms of enhancing the appropriative capacity of a particular level of engagement. But beyond that, I'm not really thought.
I haven't read Bharat, so I don't have it quite clear, this notion of the relational as the basic unit. I find it super interesting together with the scalability structure that you were talking about. But I have some problems when thinking about it from a phenomenological perspective, because of what we saw yesterday with the issue of the scale. At some point, when applied, changes the relational phenomena. No, like if I don't remember if it was like 3,000 basic units of relation can actually change the political phenomena that we are involved. So I keep tending to think, even when talking about the relational units in a more perhaps ontological way, when scale is brought upon the table, because the scalability, like, it's super interesting to think about the, like, this what's the word? Well, yeah, this scalability of relations, when you look at them, not the agents that are being related, but the relations as the basic units. But what happens in situations like this, when you have to actually materially ask about a decision of whether to talk about infrastructures, also when time scale has to be taken into account. So I don't know, how can we defend a phenomenological perspective in this scalable relationality? This is a bit of a question.
It's Haraway that sort of suggests the idea of relations as units, and then Barra talks about the idea of phenomena. It's kind of, there's kind of some similarities between the two. I think that from kind of Haraway's kind of looking at Needham and Needham's idea of what he doesn't actually express user modularity, but different levels. He's talking about different levels of scale within development. Is that there are not universal forms of relation, and that therefore is what is problematic in the kind of Chantal Mouffe positions. Even though she talks about the idea of recognizing different particularities, it still has to refer back to a kind of universalizing scale. It's, I think, not so much the thinking that there can be certain relations so that we can maintain at different scale changes, but how that scale change itself is itself a product of relation, and how we can sort of deal with that scale change. So scale changes in scale happen, and in a sense, the thing is more to think about how the points of transformation in scale can themselves sort of articulate new boundary conditions, to use Haraway's kind of phrase, and then what the relationships are there. And it may not necessarily be a mapping of relations that are possible at one scale to another. New capacity of relations needs to come into being at a different scale.
Is it also not an already clear change between the theory of merit in a way, I don't know whether I understood it always well, but also when you were saying now in scale, if you look at from a position where the apparatus is fixed and when it's more representative, scale is just, for example, doing this, but if you move the apparatus, if the apparatus is moving, scale becomes not so important anymore because it's diffracted, it's not like represented. So if scale is not represented, it is in a whole in a different energetic dimension, I want to physical dimension, it is maybe not so important. And if we keep on representing that scale ability, maybe I guess it's not happening anymore. Mm-hmm. That's the diffraction on the performativity because you stand still and you look at it. Is it making sense? Or?
Yeah, I think I know where you're going. Yeah, they could kind of the diffractive idea would be to sort of not necessarily take what are externally imposed scale measurements as being our key kind of criteria, that in a sense be falling back into the kind of, if you take Bohr's dichotomy between the quantum and classical measurement, this falling back into the kind of logics of scale is a bit like falling back into classical frame of reference. And so in a sense we're done, so that even though you might have these scaling processes going on, there are other processes that are diffractive against that, which are kind of disturbing that.
And is it disturbance? No, it's just like parallel happenings. It's just performing another dimension than the way that we are always like looking at.
Mm-hmm. I guess the thing would be
the scale is like it's on what happens on an energetic level, whether it's on a universal scale or on a particle scale, it's actually the same revolvement of energetic waves.
Mm-hmm.
So scale becomes like almost indispensable.
Yeah, it's like there are always other patternings that are always happening at the same time and interact with. So in a sense, the choice to choose scale as the kind of measure in itself is determining particular politics that come in response to that. So in a way, what I think you're arguing is that we can maybe not accept scale as the criteria we use to think about the politics and find other patterns. Maybe.
Yeah.
Are there any other questions now? Because the rest we can maybe take into the lunch. we'll do that. Thank you very much. So maybe, so you know, like,